Hello, my name's Andrew McNaughton, and I'm a member of the COTA Climate Change Group. I'm a keen follower of EV technologies, and over the last 12 months, I've been excited to see a boom in the range of EV models available in the Australian market. Reducing emissions is one way older Australians can help with climate change, and moving to electric vehicles can be part of that solution. But how do you go about choosing an EV? There's lots of new concepts, new terminology, facts, and certainly some myths as well. How can you make your way through that confusion to make a choice? In this podcast, I'll be talking with Peter, who's recently made a decision to switch to an EV. Good morning, Peter.
Good morning, Andrew.
Peter, there are many factors that could influence a decision to purchase an EV. Before we discuss your decision specifically, let's just cover some of the basics. Firstly, the type of EVs. Car makers produce three main variants of EV. There's the battery EV, which has an electric motor only and a battery to energize or run the motor. There is a hybrid, which is a vehicle with an electric motor and a petrol engine. The electric motor assists the petrol engine and improves economy, but it's not a battery EV. And then we have a pluggable hybrid EV, which also has an electric motor and a petrol engine. And these are known as PHEVs, or sometimes FEVs. Essentially, this is a hybrid with a larger battery, which is permitting fully electric operation over longer distances, but there is still a petrol engine in this vehicle. So they're the three types of EVs that are on the market at the moment. Each of these variants have their pros and cons, but they all result in lower emissions. Secondly, the driver's interface. This is quite different in an EV because there are a lot of features that are incorporated into the driver's interface. This provides important information about the systems at work in your EV, as well as other useful entertainment and safety features. The interface is quite likely to be unfamiliar at first, but it's been designed with the driver in mind, and adjustment is quick. And look, thirdly and finally, charging your EV. The simplest and most common option is to charge your EV at home. And it's worth noting that manufacturers recommend charging your EV up to 80% capacity, not 100%, to extend the life of the battery. Out on the road, just like petrol stations, there's a number of companies that offer charging facilities, and you'll typically need an app on a smartphone to access these. Once you have the app enabled, it's touch and go when you're charging. To find a charging station, most EVs on the market today will provide information to help plan your trip and when to charge. Apps will also tell you which charging stations are available. With a dose of common sense, charging is not an issue. So that's an introduction to the basics of EVs. Peter, what was it you found appealing about an EV?
Well, I guess initially it was the idea that an EV gives much reduced carbon footprint over the life of the vehicle. And secondly, they're an awful lot cheaper to fuel. So the EV that I have, I've worked it out, it's about half or slightly under half the cost of petrol, which I used in my previous vehicle. I guess the other issue for me was the EVs, because they're modern, contain an awful lot more driver help than the old car that I had, 11 years old. It was good for its time and still good, but nowadays the EVs contain all of the modern sensors and so forth, and that really helps with driving.
Do you think EVs are a novelty or a passing fad?
Absolutely not. The best example I can give is last weekend my wife and I went to Sydney to see my daughter and husband and family, and during the course of that, we caught transport with Ubers or taxis 7 or 8 times, and not once were we in a petrol vehicle, a petrol-only vehicle, I should say. 4 of the times, it was an EV, a strictly battery electric EV, and 3 of the times, it was in a hybrid the Camry hybrid that you see around, I talked to the taxi drivers and said, what's it like? One of them said, well, I do about 40,000 kilometres a year. I charge at home each night, and that's an awful lot more than kilometres than I do. But he said it's just a lot cheaper. It's cheaper for fuel. It's cheaper because the maintenance on it is so much less. There are so many fewer moving parts. And it seems to me if the taxi and Uber drivers, if they are saying it's good to go, then it seems to me it's time.
I agree, Peter. Interestingly, the turmoil in the Middle East at the time of recording and the resultant fuel supply uncertainty and price increases has supercharged interest in EVs in Australia. Fossil fuels have become expensive and supply unreliable, whilst renewables are cheap, reliable and secure. The average cost of EVs has now fallen or has reached parity or fallen below that of petrol cars in our market. And there's a lot of evidence that Australians are recognising this and making the switch. Just some statistics that support this. In Australia, this month, this quarter, there are actually more than 100 different models of electric vehicle now available in our market. These models are from recognised car makers like Tesla, Kia, Hyundai, Toyota, Mazda, Honda, BMW and Mercedes, as well as new brands that have popped up here in Australia in the last 2 years or so, such as BYD, Polestar, Geely, XPeng, GWM, Zeekr, MG, and others. I have some statistics here. Last month, in March 2026, a total of 87,000 new passenger vehicles were delivered across Australia. 15,800, or around 15% of those sales, were battery EVs. There were 17,000 hybrid electric vehicles and 8,000 pluggable hybrids. And when you add these together, more than 48% of last month's passenger sales were EVs or hybrids. The March 26 sales numbers show that sales of battery EVs have increased 88% compared to March 2025, and they're up 37% compared to February. So I think it's fair to say that the EV revolution is with us. This data is sourced from the Federal Chamber of Automotive Industries. The market is moving. Adoption of EVs will be like the adoption of personal computers and smartphones. It starts slow, then picks up speed. Generally, it takes about 10 years for a new technology to become commonplace, and there is no doubt that buyers are now seeing the value in EVs. So, Peter, you made a decision to purchase your EV. Tell me, what factors were you considering in your purchase decision?
Well, I basically boiled down to how would I use the EV? So I had five or six questions. Firstly, how easy is it to fit into the car all the things I need? What's it like to drive? What's it like to park? What's it like to go shopping? And what's it like to charge? So the practical things I need to do on a daily basis. So for me, going back to number one, what do I need to fit in it? I needed some room in the back seats to fit my grandchildren in. Other people might have wheelchairs or something like that, but for me, grandchildren. And some of the cars, a bit like petrol cars, are narrow in the back, some are wider, and I got one which was had plenty of foot room. The second thing was, what's it like to drive? I hadn't driven an electric car beforehand, so I was used to gears. I had an existing manual car. What I found, though, was that pretty much all of them are very straightforward to drive. It's a fairly easy transition. You've got to get used to the fact there's a lot less noise. And I don't know about everyone else, but I use the noise from the engine to tell me when I should change gears. The third thing was how easy it is to park. Two components with that. Because I had an old car, I didn't have a reversing camera, whereas the new one has a reversing camera. Fantastic. I can actually see where I'm going. But the related issue is turning circle. some of the EVs have got a very long turning circle, some much, much shorter. I chose one which is shorter because to get into my where I charge at home, it's a narrow back lane behind my house, and so smaller turning circle was very important. Fourth thing was shopping. It might seem a little bit odd, but the particular issue was fitting the shopping into the boot. And in my car, the boot lid was the key issue. So I hadn't realised, in fact, till I bought the car, but it's a sort of an SUV style, which means the boot lid comes a long way up, and you need a bit of force to and a bit of height to be able to bring it down. So if you're an older person, if you can, go for one with some sort of electric tailgate, or alternatively, test out the your ability to pull it down. The final one was charging. I initially had thought I'd charge at home. As it turns out, I mainly use a fast charger close by. But I'd been concerned about the issue of range. And in fact, range hasn't turned out to be a problem at all. Mm. As I said before, if a taxi driver doing 40,000 kilometres a year can charge at home and solve that problem, I can certainly solve it too.
Fantastic, Peter. And what have you found different about driving an EV in terms of the driver's interface?
Well, I guess I've touched on a couple of the things, the noise level.
Right.
So for me, I actually found driving it, it took only 5-10 minutes to adjust to driving. But what took me a bit longer was the fact that, as I said before, the changing of gears was made easier by, oh, I hear the engine revving up. Oh, yep, need to change. And an electric vehicle, it's a one-geared vehicle, so you don't have that kind of prompt.
Mm.
But very easy to change. The driver assist systems are particularly good. I mentioned earlier the reversing camera, but there are sensors around the car. One I particularly like is the blind spot detector. So lights flash on to tell you whether to your left or to your right there's somebody in your blind spot that you can't see. And if those lights are off, you can move into that lane. So if you're a person who's got a bit of a stiff neck, stiff shoulders, this is a terrific thing. And I guess the final thing, braking regeneration. So I think all of the EVs have got this facility. When you drive, you can set the regeneration factor so that you can drive with your foot on the accelerator, and when you ease it back a little bit, the car engine starts to slow the car down and it regenerates the battery. So as an example, two of my other grandchildren, we took up to Lenswood the other day to the apple orchards and we're doing some picking, had lunch at Stirling, and then came down from Stirling Hotel down to the city. At the Stirling Hotel, the battery was 63% charged. At the bottom of the freeway, it was 65%. I think that's fantastic.
You're making electricity. Excellent, Peter. Well, look, costs are another factor, and costs are always important to consider. Let's circle back and dive a little deeper into the running costs. And let's start with the fuel side of things, or which is petrol in litres for a petrol vehicle or diesel versus energy in kilowatt hours. And I've kind of done a little bit of back of the envelope numbers. A petrol car versus a battery EV doing a 100-kilometre road trip. A typical petrol car will use about 8 litres to do 100 kilometres, and petrol's about $2 a litre at the moment, so that would cost you approximately $16 for the 100 kilometres. And if you did 10,000 kilometres in a year, you'd be spending $1,600 in petrol. A battery EV uses around 15 kilowatt hours of energy to do 100 kilometres. And if you paid 44 cents a kilowatt hour for your energy off the grid, that would cost you between $7 to $8. Again, 10,000 kilometres would cost you $800 exactly half of a petrol engine. So that lines up with your thoughts, Peter. But if you had your car charged from solar panels, you could pay almost nothing for the energy that you're using to drive your vehicle. And it's worth noting the Australian government solar sharer offer for 3 hours free energy daily commences from the 1st of July, 2026. You could charge your EV in that time and energy costs would be zero. That would mean zero fuel cost, which is an attractive offer. But looking at the service costs, Peter, there are benefits you've mentioned in servicing your EV. What does the maintenance schedule look like for your car, Peter?
Well, my previous car was a once-a-year service, but now it's once every 2 years, and it's a much cheaper service because I think, Andrew, there are roughly 20 moving parts in an electric car engine, whereas I think in a petrol engine it's 1,000 plus. Yeah. So there's just a lot less to go wrong. And I'm still grappling with the idea of only every 2 years.
Seems like a long time between getting a car service, right, and enjoying the lounge in the car service company's headquarters.
That's what I go for.
And you've touched on regenerative braking, making your own energy. Look, I think we've demonstrated that battery EVs are much cheaper to run than ICE or internal combustion engine vehicles. In fact, if you have excess solar energy, you may be charging your vehicle at no cost. This comment brings me to a feature that I'm really keen to use, which is called vehicle to home. There's a lot of discussion about installing batteries at the moment to soak up excess energy in the grid through the daytime. The vehicle-to-home or vehicle-to-grid facility allows you to charge your battery when energy is abundant and cheap and draw down this energy during the evenings. Your car effectively becomes a home battery on wheels. I find this idea very appealing, and we're seeing more and more cars with this feature. But look, concerns. There are certainly some myths out there and some concerns. Prospective buyers talk about things that bother them or worry them. Take battery life, for instance. The worry is that your battery health is going to decline over time, which will reduce the available range. The reality is the statistics are telling us that batteries are lasting longer than even the most conservative estimates, meaning that you're likely to get more than 20 years effective life from a car battery. In fact, the battery is probably going to last longer than your car. And what about China as a country of origin? Some people point out that these cars are manufactured in China and that is a concern to them. My observation is that the global auto manufacturers have invested heavily in China and China's production systems are now world's best practice. I do recall back in the 70s when Japan started sending Honda Civics to Australia. The cars arrived and the quality was terrible. Through the 80s and the 90s, Japanese and Korean manufacturers improved their standards enormously, and China's on the same path. Quality is improving, and their dealer networks are growing. The other one that commonly comes up is fire risk due to their lithium batteries. Battery chemistries have really changed a lot. But look, the statistics speak for themselves. Studies from a research organization in the US called Blaze Stack shows that vehicle fire events are around 25 per 100,000 vehicles for battery EVs and about 1,530 events per 100,000 vehicles for internal combustion engines. In other words, their research shows that a petrol or diesel vehicle is 60 times more likely to be involved in a vehicle fire than a battery EV. And charging, I've seen media reports suggesting charging networks are not up to scratch, but we're seeing a lot of investment happening in this area to catch up with demand. These comments are generally ill-informed and need to be set aside. Were there any other concerns you had to address in your decision, Peter?
But there's just one last thing, and that's how you're going to charge the car. So you can either charge at home with an ordinary 240-volt socket you just plug in. That charges obviously slowly, but if you do it overnight, you get enough power. Or you can install a 7-kilowatt charger at home. Once again, I think that's what the taxi drivers use. If you go to a fast charger, because it's charging a lot quicker, the cable is a lot thicker. And what I've found is if you're an older person, you would certainly want to check out whether you had the capability to manipulate the cable. They're quite heavy and involves a bit of twisting to unkink the cable and plug it into your car. So if you've got issues with hands and, you know, some osteoarthritis, that might be something to avoid. But I'm pretty sure if the taxi drivers can do it at home, so pretty much can anyone else.
Great, Peter. Great. Well, look, in conclusion, we've covered this topic pretty quickly, but in wrapping up, I'd just like to recap. We've described the types of EVs available in the market. We've talked about the factors to consider in making an EV decision. That is cost, features, comfort, and the lower emissions. We've discussed how EVs have proven themselves as reliable and lower cost alternatives, and that secondhand EVs also represent good value. Volatile global oil markets are changing the conversation. Australians, I think, aren't asking whether EVs are the future anymore. They're asking which one they can get their hands on and when. But the most important thing is try before you buy. Make sure you test drive the car and try not to be put off by the discomfort caused by the differences in the driver interface. Any vehicle seller will give you plenty of time to try your EV, and I think you'll find you'll be able to then consider what works best for you. Thank you, Peter. We hope that you found this discussion helpful.